Welcome to Mining Now. Today on the show, we have, there's planes, trains, and automobiles, and today we are doing trains. And if you don't love trains, I don't know. Can't help you, but it's just an awesome company with an incredible history, Brookville Equipment Corporation. They do a lot of work outside the mining industry, but are very prominent within the mining sector. So we've got their director of sales, Michael White, on. Michael, welcome to the show. Great to have you on.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Michael, we're going to cover a lot of ground here. We're going to talk, the mining side is obviously going to be the main focus. But before we just sort of dive into all that, we need to get some history. It's a great history of the company. Can you just walk us through the story that is Brookville?
Absolutely. Yeah, so the company started in 1918. We were a small company at that time, was owned by a gentleman who had a Ford dealership. He was contacted by customers who said, hey, the roads are unimproved in this area. We need to be able to put some flanged wheels on these Ford trucks. And so, you know, we kind of went down that route, put flanged wheels on Model T trucks and put them on the railroads. And it was a great benefit for those folks locally. And they were able to get units out there. And Brookville Locomotive Works was created through that endeavor. And through that time, you know, 1918, you know, we were making different units, small units for little mines, you know, moving logs and so forth for logging companies on old little railroad beds. We did a lot of that exporting. We would send units out to sugarcane fields and so forth. And during that time frame, you know, of course, the Great Depression happened, and we had as a company a lot more business during that time because we were simply exporting our pieces of equipment overseas to where things were needed. And so the companies that grabbed us and said, "Hey, we need some pieces of equipment out there," we were able to grow as a company during that time frame when other groups are downsizing. During that time, we were exporting pieces of equipment. We sent stuff to depot level maintenance facilities, you know, to help with ordinances during war times. We sent pieces of equipment with international harvester pieces. We really did kind of make units out of other components that were important to those people in that particular area.
Wow. Just, I mean, just the history of the company, you could probably do two or three episodes and not really cover it. But now the company, just to sort of zoom way out, I've got your website right in front of me, and it's showing it's all different types of trains. Can you sort of cover the entirety of what you're delivering to the market and in the different market sectors?
Yep, absolutely. So just to cover, you know, the mining sector, we do make equipment for underground mine use. We do everything from rail to rubber tired types of equipment that could go into a tunnel project, underground hard rock or coal mine, different locations like that. We use that experience as an evolution. We moved that type of equipment over into our passenger transit. So we got into streetcar remanufacturing and you know, did a lot of vehicle bodies and so forth, where we would take the old cars and redo them with new modern technologies. And we also got into locomotives, you know, full-size freight locomotives, doing rehabs at first, then building all new units as well, put those together. And then of course we've moved into other areas too. We're making small chassis for parade floats and other types of equipment like that. So quite a breadth of equipment, you know, diversified. You know, when one market might be down a little bit, another market's up. So keeps us employed and keeping the shop full.
Let's talk about our heavy industry world tour, brought to you by Savannah Equipment, supplying mining equipment worldwide. We are heading to events across North America and Australia and filming episodes on location. Email us at info@crownsman.com to be part of Crownsman's Heavy Industry World Tour. LNH Industrial can custom engineer and build from the ground up any heavy equipment assembly or machine that you need for your operation. Their worldwide 24/7 field services network is on the job whenever you need heavy equipment troubleshooting, repairs, rebuilds, relocations, or replacements. And thanks to their specialized design and engineering and state-of-the-art manufacturing and repair services, they are a go-to international supplier for improved components and custom assemblies for heavy industrial machinery. Visit LNH.net to learn more. Your partner in technical services, AMPS, have been industry leaders in technical services optimization systems and training since 2011. With a team of over 70 resource professionals, AMPS provides world-class support to mining technical services teams globally. AMPS builds the capabilities within teams on-site to maximize results and unlock value in mining operations. With significant experience in operational underground and open pit engineering and geology, AMPS is passionate about delivering value to their clients across an array of professional services. If you're looking to improve your mine site's technical services, visit advancedmps.com or email partner at advancedmps.com today.
That customization then has never really gone away, right, from day one.
Right. And you know, each mine has a particular location, set of standards, requirements. You know, those guys really need pieces of equipment that bring the most value to their particular operation. And we do listen to those customers. We make those adjustments and create unique pieces of equipment for them that other folks aren't doing. You know, we don't just, you know, what color do you want it? We say exactly how it needs to be, and we'll put those customizations on there.
Where's your client base? Do you deliver globally? Is the U.S. your primary market, up into Canada?
Yeah, so primarily we are North American based. You know, we do a lot of work in the U.S., some in Canada, some in Mexico. We have shipped internationally. As I said, we've shipped over 80 countries in total, lots of different places over our time frame, but mostly here in the U.S. is our main markets. You know, we're heavily entrenched in the East, you know, with a lot of coal mining operations that run Brookfield pieces of equipment. So it's been a good market, but hard rock, precious metal mines, you know, anything like that, that we could make a piece of equipment for them and, make them have a better system, you know, whether it be faster, stronger, you know, something that stays underground for 20 years. I mean, that's a Brookfield piece of equipment for you.
You probably just touched on it just now, but I'd like to expand on it a bit. What is the competitive edge? I mean, a company that's been around that long, and still, and I know the people talk about customization. If someone goes onto your website, we'll have, of course, the link to it. They'll know this is not just a talking point. There are so many different types of trains. As soon as you open your website, they just start scrolling through all the types of trains that you've done.
Right.
What has kept the company so competitive over such, I mean, literally wars, depressions, economic changes, the shift from diesel to battery. I mean, all these things that have gone on in all those years. What is sort of the through line for Brookfield that keeps them, that gives them that competitive edge?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we really focus on is integrating the best components, right? Mm. We're not necessarily looking to provide something the fastest, the cheapest. We want it to bring the most value. And so for us, you know, whether it's a Cummins engine, a Caterpillar, a Deutz, you know, we don't really we don't care what color the engine block is. We want to make sure that the customer's happy with this, you know, the equipment that they have. If they already have Deutz engines in their mine, you know, we want to try to keep that, product line moving for them, so they have something that's similar to the other pieces of equipment, so they can keep maintenance working friendly. So we do that with all the components, you know, the axles, the transmissions, everything is really customized to bring the best piece of equipment there.
So you're really not. So again, I want to highlight this because this is an important thing, because I do a lot of interviews and people will talk about sort of customization, but sometimes when you dig in, it's just sort of, they're customized within this little box. But you're really saying, like, even your axles, your engines, your transmissions, all of that, you really are brand agnostic to it. It is what you're building it to fit a particular application every time.
Yeah, and just to, I guess, maybe put walls around that we do as a company have a engineering group inside our walls that everything is vetted from the beginning to the end. So if a customer were to come to us and say, you know, I want XYZ on there, and we do an analysis and say, you know, we recommend that you should stick with this particular component. We're going to make those recommendations that, you know, we're looking for something that can meet their requirements. Anytime someone has a piece of equipment they want us to build, we go through an analysis to make sure that all of that equipment is vetted properly. You know, we do finite element analysis of the frame. We'll do testing and so forth that's necessary to make sure that we're meeting the minimum requirements and we're going to exceed expectations.
Hey, mining enthusiasts, registration for CIM Connect 2024 Vancouver from May 12th to 15th is now open. Last year, this convention had over 6,800 participants from 60 countries, with 1,796 delegates, 702 booths, and 320 presentations. Secure your spot and register now at convention.cim.org. CIM Connect 2024, where quality and innovation define the experience. Orica Digital Solutions seamlessly connects customers' physical and digital worlds so they can readily understand and optimize operations at every step of the value chain, from exploration to processing. Whether deployed individually or as a whole, Orica Digital Solutions technologies deliver intelligence for open cut and underground mines to make more precise and faster decisions. With a complete, timely, and accurate picture, operations can adapt to improve safety, drive productivity, reduce costs, and environmental impacts. To learn more about Orica Digital Solutions, visit orica.com/digital solutions today. Reduce tire-related production interruptions and enhance vehicle safety with Doran tire monitoring systems designed for off-road, earth-moving, and industrial equipment. Real-time access to accurate, reliable tire pressure and temperature information helps operators and supervisors maximize equipment performance and tire life. Doran tire monitoring systems are designed to withstand extreme operation conditions while featuring simple installation and low maintenance. Visit doranmfg.com for more information on how Doran can help reduce equipment downtime and improve safety.
Well, how long have you been with the company?
17 years.
17 years.
Sir.
You must really like each other.
It's been a good run. Like I said, you know, it's a different job every day. When you arrive at work,
yeah,
you never know what the phone call is going to be, what type of equipment you're making, what mine site or location you're going to go to next.
To put you on the spot, have you, what is the strangest call? Does anything come to mind where someone asked for something, you're like, okay, no, trains don't go upside down. Sorry.
Yeah, we definitely have seen a lot of different pieces of equipment where folks have had, pieces of equipment that's been in the field for 40 years. And they're like, can you resurrect this? And you go there and you find out it looks like a burned out frame. You know, there's, you know, one piece of equipment that's with it. And they're like, what do you think you can do with this? And we're like, well, I think we're going to start over. But, that's one of the things that we do pride ourselves on, that the equipment that we build, we do continue to service it for years. You know, we're a family run company. We look at that sales a partnership, that folks are going to get someone who's going to answer the call late at night. We're going to send the same person who built the unit out there to service it. You know, there's a lot of folks that are really invested in these pieces of equipment, and so they get their money's worth when they call Brookville.
Do they have you seen cases where someone has like an old street car or something? Well, of course we want to focus on mining, but something like an old street car, you know, a municipality wants to refurbish these units and bring them back. Are you running into things like that?
Oh, absolutely. We probably do as much refurbishment work as we do new equipment sales. And, when we say refurbishment, the unit leaves the shop just like it looked when it was brand new.
Wow.
You know, we're bringing it back to OEM specs. You know, it's getting a new diesel engine in there. We're rebuilding the transmission to OEM specs. Everything, you know, gets a new lease on life. And we call them like midlife overhauls.
Yeah.
You know, because 8-10 years of being underground, you would think a unit needs to be scrapped. We're like, no, bring it back to Brookville. We can freshen it up and put it back out there for another 8-10 years.
So that, even in mining, that's about half your business then, is just refurbishing some of these older units.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, when you look at a mine that is investing in their capital plans, they're looking at equipment that's going to last for a long time. Let's say a mine might have a 20-year plan. You know, they need equipment that's going to be there from the start to the finish. They don't want to be scrapping out, you know, equipment after 2 years or 4 years. They want something that's going to last that the life of the mine. And so we do see most equipment that we've built goes out for about 8 years, comes back in for a rebuild, goes back out the door again. So it's a great piece of equipment that, you know, you're going to get from from our company.
This isn't, you know, I'm not trying to like call out your competitors or anything like that, but just what separates out a well-built train from a poorly built one? I know that's a simple question, but is it, you know, I know, for example, in conveyor systems, like rollers, you can look at one roller, they will look identical, but the wear time on one is a completely different, it's a very different manufacturing criteria that they're using to build it.
Absolutely.
Where is that well-built train versus something that's going to last 6 years, or how, I don't even know how you'd gauge it, but how do you differentiate between the two?
Yeah, so two major things. One is the component that you're choosing, and the second is the way the component is installed. I think we can't say enough about that our teams of Brookville staff not only assemble the equipment well, but we also have an engineered solution behind the way it's assembled. So our team has looked at the driveline angles, you know, what degree is that angle coming off of the yoke going into a drive shaft into, you know, this other piece of equipment? Like you would see in any vehicle you might put on the road, you know, if you put a lift kit on something and you change those driveline angles, suddenly your U-joints are going bad, that you're breaking, you know, breaking pieces of equipment. You've got to make sure that just like a mining piece of equipment is going to be in rough and tough environments down there, we need to make sure that everything has been reviewed. And, you know, sometimes it takes a little longer, costs a little bit more. But at the end of the day, if your group can assume that it's going to run, you know, a full shift without any problems, moving long wall shields or anything like that, you know, you can believe in a Brookville. And that's really what we've done. So got great component and it's installed correctly and it's going to last a long time.
What about the world of, you know, battery, diesel? We're talking, of course, underground, hard rock, open pit. There's all these different types of mines that are out there. What have you got into that space, into the battery and diesel? Have you got into any of the, we've seen some not in the train side, but on the, in other equipment where they're actually switching over. I think we've actually seen equipment go from a diesel to a battery. Have you got into any of that space?
Yeah, so it's an interesting concept, right? That it's like bell bottom jeans, right? They were in one day, out, then they're back in, right? So we did a lot of mining equipment in the 90s that were battery. Then there was a shift, went to diesel. Everybody put diesel equipment in there. Now there's a green effort out there that folks are looking at batteries again and saying, well, can we do it with a battery unit? So we've come full circle to what we've done. We did a lot of lead acid battery equipment in the early 90s, really, put together regenerative brake systems with those batteries, extending the life of that battery in there. Now we're looking at lithium ion battery technologies and, you know, how can that be used in different mine operations? And, you know, there's still a lot of information that's being shared with those groups. They're determining how they fit, you know, in the mine plans. You know, there's a from coal mines to hard rock mines to all those different applications, each one of them has to make their own decision what's the best type of equipment to run underground. But Brookville's set up and ready to build those pieces of equipment for them.
So you are building both. Have you got into, so I guess going, if you said the ones, you said the lead batteries out of the 90s, right? That was kind of common.
Yep. Lead acid batteries.
Lead acid batteries. Are you getting some calls about some of those units and people wanting to switch over to lithium, that kind of thing? Does that happen?
Yeah, I think there's a big push right now for lithium batteries. I mean, you know, everybody sees it from the Teslas and their cell phones out there that they want to use that same technology. We are seeing a lot of requests for that as well. You know, we do make for the evolution piece of our company, we make street cars that use a lithium ion battery technology to allow that street car to run in sections where there's no overhead catenary. So we do fire vehicles there. So we're taking that battery technology and understanding that we have and putting it back into our mining business, just like we took the mining technology and put it into our transit business years ago. We're now feeding back in and saying, hey, we've got experience using, you know, different types of battery chemistries. You know, there's different chemistries for each of these groups out there. And, you know, sometimes they want LTO, LFP, NMC. You know, we're looking at all those chemistries and saying, what's the best route for your application? How can we provide the most value for what you're going to buy from us? You know, the battery has to be safe. It also has to have the power density that it needs. It needs to be able to fit in the application. You know, if you give a miner that's got a set up underground that's certain width, for instance, 60 inches wide, can't go through anything wider than that. You give them a 70 inch wide battery because you need it for that size. Well, suddenly it doesn't fit his operations. Mm. It's got a problem. And Brookville looks at that from a holistic point of view. We want to know all that information ahead of time so that we can provide them the right fit for their applications.
So is it an art? Do you deliver it? I know I'm getting into the weeds a little bit, but I find it interesting. A lot of the companies we have on have like an R&D side of their business. It almost sounds like you don't really need the R&D. You almost have like an engineering and design team that the R&D happens as the client has Correct. Needs. You find out. So that's more your approach.
Right. Yeah. So we have like myself in sales, I'll go out on the road, find out exactly what the customer's looking for. I have what's called an applications engineering group that then helps me to understand, you know, the requirements to meet that sale. We then, you know, make a proposal to the customer. It's going to be XYZ. This is what we're going to be able to provide. And then once that sale is completed, then we have a full team of engineers that then build out the unit to those initial specifications, bring in the customer for preliminary design reviews. It's a very hands-on environment for us. And we do, like I said, have a great team to work with the customer.
I saw a note here about mentioning that it's not over-engineered. Is that another approach and a selling point? What are these units like for maintenance, repair, once they're actually on site?
Absolutely, yeah. That's a key component for us, right? That we know that at the end of the day that the engineer has created something that someone's going to have to maintain every day, every week for the next 8 to 10 years or however long it's underground. And so we want to make sure that's done well. So, you know, most of the guys out there have an understanding of standard diesel engines and so forth. If you want to go down that route, we want to make it like they would typically see in their other maintenance applications. And so we make sure that it's, it's got a, you know, fuel plug that you can find or a, you know, diagnostic test that you can easily read and make sure. We don't want to add extra switches and things that are not adding value to the customer. We want to make it safe. We want to make sure that those safety measures are in there. But, you know, we also want to make it maintenance friendly. And that's the key. You know, you've got a coal miner, it's in a dark tunnel down there and the lights go out on the locomotive. He wants to be able to troubleshoot it. You know, we don't want to have lots of switches and diodes that he has to go through. He should be able to root right through there and figure things out.
I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but it's something I wonder, and I feel like a lot of people wonder it. Do these, when things get from that simple working really well to this overcomplicated, it's three levels to get to one answer and all that, is that because it's cheaper to put these three parts together than this one really good part? Is that why these things get over-engineered, or is it just simply that, just over-engineering and over-designing? Why does that happen to products sometimes?
I think that, you know, the easy route is always, what do we have on the shelf that will fit this application? Mm. It's not always as easy to say, you know, we need to go out and get a new design so that it, you know, eliminates these extra, you know, pieces. Like you said, you know, you would rather have a single, you know, machined piece than to have three pieces that are, you know, machined separately and then brought in. There's extra labors, there are extra, you know, parts on there. And so, you know, we definitely try to do that. We will work with the manufacturers of our components to find out if we can get something that is better streamlined. And obviously it's a cost proposition. You know, if you're only doing one unit
right
like that, then it doesn't make sense to do it. But if you find that there's a case study where, you know, everyone could build the same unit around this component, a lot of those vendors will work with you to create those pieces and get you the right item to go on your unit.
How much, you mentioned you going on site, how much of it is boots on the ground? How much is that approach part of, especially for the mining sector where, I mean, typically these environments, they're as unique as they are rugged. So what is your approach to, you know, actually being on the ground and being part of that conversation? From the
Absolutely.
Beginning.
Yeah. It's such an important piece for us. You know, we do thankfully have a great following. Folks have either been at a mine that ran Brookfield equipment, or, you know, they're very familiar with our brand and our equipment out there. So we get a lot of repeat customers that say, you know, I was at mine XYZ, I'm now here. You know, I really want a Brookfield piece. I know enough about your pieces of equipment that I can get you into this ballpark to get started. At the same time, we also, you know, new locations pop up all the time and people want to know exactly what they need to look at. You know, we get down there, bring the engineers with us, you know, we'll check out track, you know, we'll make sure that, you know, the grades and so forth that they're intending to go are something that's applicable to the unit that they're asking for. So, you know, we will do those on-site estimations and kind of put that as part of the requirement that we want to make sure that, you know, sight unseen, you know, this piece of equipment isn't going down there. We're going to make sure that you have buy-in from the start to the finish, and it starts off with new mine applications, or maybe it's a change that they're making. We're going to go from,
I was going to ask about that,
to rubber tire.
Yeah, that's actually what I was going to ask you about is, well, one, how big is the rail to the rubber? Is it pretty similar for business-wise in the mining sector for you?
So there's a lot of differences. Obviously, you know, the lower you go in seams of material you're cutting, you know, so if it's coal, you know, those seams are much lower. We're talking 72 inches or shorter. You know, we're making some units that are down to 38 inches tall. I mean, as high as a desk, you know, we're putting pieces of equipment on the ground that run men and materials with something like that. So rubber tired units are typically much taller. You know, they're a bigger piece of equipment. You know, they have turning radiuses that are much different than you'd have with rail. So, you know, each of the mine applications, you know, drive the type of equipment that they might need. But we definitely see that rubber tire is becoming a more prominent piece of equipment out there. You know, you have mines that are looking at maybe shorter lifespans. Maybe it's only 6 years. And, you know, to lay rail and put that in there is a little bit more difficult. But we do make rubber-tired pieces of equipment in battery or diesel that can use those same parameters, the same 8-year before the midlife overall. I mean, that same componentry is going into the rubber-tired units that we would make as well.
Do you mentioned shifting? Do you see many shifts from like a rail to tire to rail? Or the other thing I was wondering is like, let's say 5 years ago they invested, they have a train, or 10 years ago, and now they're maybe scaling up their operation, so now they need more horsepower. Again, I'm not maybe speaking the right terminology, but do they need to upscale? Their trains and that sort of thing. Do you see that sort of thing, or do most mines that it's pretty set right from the get go?
Yeah, it's pretty set. Once they determine that, you know, rail is the way they're going to go, you know, 95% of the time that mine is open, it's going to be rail. And you know, but there's going to be other areas of the mine that need rubber tired equipment. The rail haulage lines, you know, may service rubber tired pieces of equipment that are over, you know, in the sections or, you know, different offshoots or, you know, we have a particular customer right now that has gone into a new section of coal. And in order to get there, the steepness of that coal seam is so much that rail units just won't service that area. So they need to switch to rubber tired. And so, you know, there can be, you know, as the mine plan expands and, you know, they keep looking at the infrastructure they have, they're like, well, we could keep using this portal but go into this new section of coal, but it's a 8 or 9 degree slope. You know, how do we get down in there with rail units that, you know, can't do more than a couple of percent? You know, that's where that comes in, and Brookfield's there for you. If you're comfortable with a Brookfield, we can make the rubber tired equipment for you as well.
Wow. Have you ever gone around, like just kind of going around, when you're at these mines, sometimes, even for me, I find I sit in the studio sometimes and you can almost like, not get disconnected, but you're not, you know, you're not part of actually doing the mining. Do you ever get to be on site and sort of like hear a story or see something, you go, oh, this is the importance. And I'm kind of alluding to around like things like safety and, you know, getting people, they're going underground. It's still a wild thing that we send people underground and then they have to come back out. Do you ever just sort of see on site and get just sort of go, oh, this is what we're doing. We're actually putting people in and we're getting them out safely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have a great story, a kind of along those lines. When I first started with the company, I was at a trade show and a gentleman came to the booth and he said, I've got a story for you if you want to report on something for marketing. I was like, what is that? He said, well, I've been working at this mine for 20 years. And he said, I've ridden on a Brookville man trip. He said, for those 20 years, that unit has never seen the light of day. It's once it went underground, we have a maintenance shop. We maintenance the unit. We've replaced engines, transmissions, everything on there. He said, you know, when I get in that unit at the end of the work shift, he said, I know it's going to get me back to the portal, get me back to my family. And I said, this is impressive. I need to learn more about this. So went underground, went to that location, you know, saw what the man was talking about. And, you know, it really changed me as a new salesman with the company that these men could believe in a Brookville at the end of the day. They could believe that the unit was sitting there ready to go. And that, you know, like you said, you go underground 600-800 feet, you're doing, you know, the work that no one else will do. At the end of the day, you want to get back to your families and you need to have reliable transportation. That's where our pieces of equipment had been doing that for that gentleman for 20 years. I mean, an entire career, he'd been riding, you know, similar Brookville unit. And I, you know, it really meant a lot to us, you know, as a company. And so, you know, obviously that's the kind of stuff that we want in the future for everyone to think the same way, that, you know, whether it's hauling roof bolts in or men out, you know, we want to make sure that that equipment gets to where it needs to be, or those people get where they need to be at the end of the day, or to make that shift work so that you can be productive.
You know, I just, before I let you go, I was thinking, you know, people, you know, bring their parents to work or bring their parents to school, you know, those types of things. And I was thinking, you know, the guy who sells trains, it's quite, do you ever sort of think, this is what, when kids love trains, people love trains, and you get to actually work with them. Do you, I mean, you've been at it for now, you said 17 years. Right. Do you still enjoy it? Do you still, I mean, all these custom trains, and it's just a sort of a unique and neat thing to be a part of.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, my background, you know, I was in the Coast Guard. I was a military aviation electrician as a young man, traveled a little bit, you know, not much in comparison to this company. You know, I've been, you know, across the globe, traveling to different locations to see operations, to find, you know, places in Brazil, Peru, Chile. You know, I've been to Australia, lots of locations where, you know, we have gone to them saying, Brookville can make this piece of equipment for you, and we can bring some value to your operations. And that's really been something that you can, you know, every day go to work and say, I don't know what I'm going to be doing today, but I know it's going to be something for the good of someone out there that's our customer.
Well, it's been a long time since we've discussed trains on the show. Actually, it was one of the first episodes we did was about it. Of course, I won't name competitors and stuff like that, but it's been way too long. So it's very fun for me. Trains in one of our other studios are part of our background. So it's very exciting. Michael, just thank you for coming on. Of course, we'll have links. People want to connect with you. The Brookville website. It's worth, even if you're not into buying something, go on to Brookville and just check out the website. It's, they're just, the trains you make are, just go on and see it. You'll know what I mean as soon as you go on it. It's great company, great history, and I genuinely appreciate you taking the time to do this. I know it's a busy show. It's just fun to have you on.
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity to be out here to talk about our products. And like I said, you can believe in a Brookville. Do the great things for your company, and we'll help you out with that. We'll be your partner.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to, my Canadian-ness is coming out with a story, but I wanted to ask you about certification. I put it in as a note. I wanted to make sure I got it covered. Is there this, what is the certification that trains go under?
Yep. So we were originally certified for manufacturing trains under the American Association of Railroads M1003. Certification program. So making locomotives, making those large pieces of equipment that you're talking about, you had to have that certification. So we've used that across the board with all of our equipment. But a lot of folks were saying, you know, hey, we're used to the ISO standards, you know, and so they wanted ISO 9001. So we just recently obtained that certification. It was for us that had already been doing a quality program for the AAR group. It was an easy transition for us to provide the right documentation needed to get certified, but we just received our ISO 9001 certification. So we're excited about that, and that will help us to kind of bridge all gaps out there. Folks who want to know how well we do our equipment and how well we document things, we're meeting that ISO standard now.
Absolutely. Okay, Michael, thank you very much. Hope to have you back soon.
Absolutely. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for watching. Again, there'll be links. You can connect with Michael to their website. Yes, they have a YouTube channel as well, so you can go check. Actually, I watched some of their YouTube channel yesterday. There's some cool stuff on there as along with their website. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Thank you, everybody, for supporting the show. We will see you on the next episode of Mining Now.